Right on, right on. Well, let's kind of roll into it.
Yeah.
Nice new ride.
Thank you, sir. Been a while since I've had a car note, but yeah. I was ready for one. It was time.
Yeah. Sometimes you just gotta
bite the bullet, man.
Yeah. It's better than walking.
Oh, yeah.
You can put a lot into shoes.
I definitely got a dependable ride now. Able to get around for a while. Be able to make those trips up to Dallas for Texas Frightmare Weekend.
Absolutely. Well, welcome one and all to episode 70 of the Scary Dad Podcast. We are going to get off of the comedy tangent and go back into a little bit of horror. Sorry, but, you know, episode 69 just had us cracking up the whole time making it, the whole time listening back to it.
Doesn't 70 sound so much more boring to 69?
I know.
Saying 70.
Yeah.
69.
Exactly. So it is February 12th, 2018. We're halfway through February, which means we're about halfway through the first quarter already. It's crazy to think about.
Yeah, I know, man.
That's true. So let's see what happens in old business when people are getting over their holiday blues and time to start moving. So 1881, Pope John the VIII crowns Charles the Fat, the King of Italy, Holy Roman Emperor.
Chuck the Fat.
Yeah.
Fat Chuck.
We did the episode about like the movies you can't make and everything was fat shaming.
Yeah.
This is a king.
They call fat.
They call Charles the Fat.
The Fat.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know, other than his name, any accomplishments he had, but there you go.
Sounds like only the accomplishment is being fat.
Yeah. And being named Charles. Okay, 1554. A year after claiming the throne of England for 9 days, Lady Jane Grey is beheaded for treason.
Pop.
Yep. No good. All right, let's see. We talked last week about the Welcome Stranger, that big gold bar, that good nugget that was found in Australia.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so looking at my notes, that was actually in 1869. Okay, the February of 1869. So, not too far before.
Yeah.
Edward Hargrove announces he's found gold in New South Wales that actually starts the Australian gold rush. So, one of those things, like, I wouldn't have written that down if it hadn't been for that other thing last week.
But
those things kind of like, I'm waiting for Zsa Zsa Gabor to show up in our notes again.
He knows she's due.
Yeah, she hadn't been on for a while. All right. On this date, for all of you who are listening to us on a podcast device, whether it's on a computer or on a podcast app on a smartphone or an MP3 player or however it is that you're listening to this, check this out. On this date in 1954, the Lyons Company's LEO produces a payroll report, the first time a computer is used in business ever.
Oh, wow. TPS reports were next.
Yep. And let's get into happy birthdays, notable births. On this date in 1809, controversial figure, Charles Darwin was born.
Yeah, he was ahead of his time. He was called a loon and everything else.
Yeah. 1809, Abraham Lincoln was born.
I was talking about earlier, I used to watch a show called Eastbound and Down, and Kenny Powers in the show is talking to his class, and he goes, besides getting shot in the back of the head, anybody else know what Abraham Lincoln's famous for?
did you see that Dundee?
Yeah, I did.
The trailer before they revealed that it wasn't real, and it was like, dude, I'll go see that. That was awesome.
It was funny, because the trailer was real short and didn't have a whole lot to it.
Yeah.
It ended up being a Super Bowl commercial. By the way, what he was famous for was he was a world-class wrestler. That's what he brought up.
So, oh, that was
He went from getting shot in the head to being a wrestler, and that's pretty much what he was famous for, according to Kenny.
I'm always reading these little tidbits and stuff, and there's a, like, one of the things I follow on Instagram. It's like like Did You Know, and that's the name of it, and it'll always have some kind of little tidbit of fact. Okay, so Abraham Lincoln is known as Honest Abe,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, he wouldn't lie or whatever, but in reality, Honest Abe was put in quotation marks in political cartoons by his, because
it's actually satire.
Yeah, apparently you couldn't trust the guy. So interesting little stuff like that. Let's see. 1950, Mr. Michael Ironside. He has been in a hell of a lot of stuff.
Yes, it's a character actor extreme.
And he's always almost always a bad guy.
Yeah.
He's a really good bad guy. So he's kind of intense. He's the kind of guy that you wonder if he's really that, like, intense in real life, or if he just is a really good actor, because he's believable.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but he... It doesn't look like he's working that hard.
It's pretty easy to be malicious. Jerk. Yeah.
All right, 1956, Mr. Arsenio Hall, staple of the 90s late night TV.
Yes, he was, man.
Love Arsenio.
Oh, he was a great show. I don't know. It just fell off the map all of a sudden. Just totally.
So, I don't exactly remember what happened.
I know. He just all of a disappeared.
Sudden. He got crosswise with producers.
Okay.
It's pretty much the long and the short of it was he wanted the show to go in a different direction, and they wanted him to do something else.
Right.
And he got crosswise with them, and it was one of those cases of you're never going to work in this town again.
Right.
And
but his show was phenomenal. Man. Oh. It changed late night television.
It was great.
You remember the Chevy Chase show that started shortly after hit Theodore Arsenio?
It crashed.
It didn't last a season, dude. I think three episodes and they shut it down. Yeah. It was horrible.
Well, it's one of those things, like some... I remember the comedian Mitch Hedberg. You remember him?
Yeah, I remember Mitch.
Mitch had a bit where he's talking about he's starting to get parts and shows and movies and stuff. And he was like, it was the weirdest thing, you know. I always grew up and I wanted to be a comedian, so I'd sit in my room and I'd write jokes, and I'd tell jokes in the mirror, and I'd tell jokes to my friends. And all I've ever wanted to do was stand up. And now I'm getting asked to be in these movies, and it's a whole different skill set. He's like, it's really weird, you know. It's like you train your whole life to be a baker, and they're like, that's awesome. Can you drive a car? And you're like, yeah,
I can draw.
I can give it a shot, but... And I completely failed that joke, but you get the gist.
Yeah, yeah.
1968, he wasn't one of the Goonies, but he helped him, and now he's Thanos, but Mr. Josh Brolin.
Okay.
1980, Miss Christina Ricci.
Okay.
Wednesday Addams. And not a whole lot of notable deaths. We're still in kind of football fever, I guess, after the Super Bowl here. So in 2000, we lost Tom Landry.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2014, we lost, I guess, funny man, Sid Caesar.
Okay.
He did all kinds of things.
Did all kinds of things, yeah.
Mostly Hollywood Squares.
It's funny watching Buzzer Network, all these people that were famous for game shows.
Yeah.
That's all they did.
What they did.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they did
variety shows, really, really big,
yeah.
Where it's like you'd have like the Sonny and Cher variety hour, and then you'd have all these like, I don't even want to, you call them like D-list celebrities, because all they did was come on variety shows and be, you know, but they were just themselves. You know?
But they were staples on that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, and you've got to wonder, like, if they had the dressing room with all the scarves, and they're all like, oh, I'm Hollywood, and you're like... You did a big part in the game show back in the 60s. And that's it for old business. Let's take a quick break.
Yes.
And we will be back to talk some new business.
Bruce Wayne.
And what do you do for a living?
Lieutenant, is there a 6-foot bat in Gotham City?
Nice outfit.
Ah!
You look fine.
I didn't ask. I have given a name to my pain.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
Where does he get those wonderful toys?
My life is really complex.
Winged freak terrorizes. Wait till they get a load of me.
Anyway, dude, I remember when I first saw that.
What's that?
Batman.
Yeah.
You know? It was
phenomenal, dude.
It was just like, I remember,
I was working at the movies at the time.
They had longer and longer trailers, and so it's like you already saw half the movie before you went to the theater. Yeah. We'll get into it. Why don't we talk about some new business?
Yeah, I got a little bit. One thing I don't have notes on, but just to bring up. What do you think of Robert Wagner?
Oh,
huh?
Damn.
That's crazy news, huh? You thought he was getting away scot-free, but he's now a person of interest.
Yeah.
And, details have come out just about apparently Lord, I cannot believe
Not
his name
would.
Escapes me. No, his name that was on the boat with him. Foo Fighters.
Oh, Christopher Walken.
Christopher Walken. He was on the boat, and he gave a police statement that conflicted with Wagner's, and it's looking pretty bad for Mr. Robert Wagner at this point.
Well, I mean, if he did it,
he needs to pay for it.
Gotta pay for it.
But for those who aren't aware, Robert Wagner, his wife Natalie Wood, and Christopher Walken were on a boat, and they were
drinking.
They were drinking, and apparently Robert Wagner got in a fight with Natalie Wood about her on-screen chemistry with Christopher Walken, and it got heated. The captain came down and found Robert Wagner on the back of the boat, all sweaty and everything, saying that Natalie was missing. The captain searched the boat, couldn't find her. Next thing you know, Wagner says that one of the dinghies is gone. She must have split. And her body was found washed up on shore, battered and bruised. And they blame the bruises on her hanging onto the side of the dinghy and being beat up by waves, which is total bullshit,
yeah.
Of course. But yeah, so the case has been reopened, and they're looking hard at Mr. Wagner.
Well, if he did it,
he needs to pay.
He needs to pay.
Okay.
There's no statute of limitations on murder.
Right.
You know?
Okay, you've seen Lawnmower Man, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Recently in Toronto, Mr. Bruce MacArthur, 66, is a serial killer that recently got arrested. MacArthur dismembered his victims and hid their remains in planters, police say. He may have also buried them on the lawns he tended for his clients throughout the city and its environs. He was a lawnmower man. He was a gardener.
Wow.
And it's looking like he was pretty much a real-life lawnmower man in Toronto. They're thinking he may have had... He worked on more than 30 properties. And they're looking at potentially up to 60 victims he may have had. So that's pretty crazy, man.
Wow.
Yeah, real-life lawnmower man.
But the Lawnmower Man was about virtual reality.
Well, the short story. You ever heard the short story?
Yeah.
Yeah, the short story was about a gardener that killed people. Okay. You're going to like this one. There's currently somebody named George stalking the Everglade waters, who happens to be a great white shark.
Really?
Yep. Great white shark named George has been spotted lingering off the Florida coast near the Everglades. The organization that tracks great white sharks, OSearch, named him George. That's his name under the survey. He was tagged October 2016 off the coast of Massachusetts, and he's traveled all the way down to Florida. So far, all the areas he's gone, he's crossed the Atlantic. He's traveled more than 4,500 miles, and now he's hanging out in Florida. He's last recorded at 702 pounds and 10 feet long. And as of late Sunday, he appeared to be making his way up Florida's western coast towards Everglades City. That's
wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So he's inland.
Yes.
In the
stalking
swamp.
Around the Everglades, yeah. Pretty nuts, man.
Yeah.
Pretty nuts.
You know, I guess that's one of those things where the water's just salty enough, you know.
It's brackish enough to where
that,
it gets
you know, he'll get to a certain point and he'll start not feeling good and he'll just kind of turn around and go back out.
Yeah, well, know that I remember whenever hurricanes used to come in Louisiana, the storm surge would put so much brackish water up inland into the canals and everything, you could catch sharks and saltwater fish way further up in the canal than you normally could. Oh. Crabs, all kinds of stuff. We used to just love hitting up the canals after a hurricane. But that's it for new business for tonight.
All right. Let's listen to another one of our wonderful sponsors, and
we'll be back.
From the director of Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Adam and Barbara are
ghosts.
What's the good of being a ghost if you can't frighten people away?
Their house is being haunted by the living.
Maybe the house could use a little remodeling.
And they can't scare them into leaving.
They're dead. It's a little late to be neurotic.
So they're calling on Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice!
Who's no ordinary ghost.
Yeah, you don't want his help.
Can you be scary?
What do you think of this?
Now, the party's over.
You want somebody out of the house, I want to get somebody out of your house.
But the fun has just begun.
It's showtime.
Learn to throw your voice, fool your friends, fun and party.
Not bad.
This is amazing.
You want a cigarette?
Oh, no, thank you.
Oh, yeah, here I come, baby.
He's guaranteed to put some life...
Attention, King Word Shoppers!
...in your afterlife. Michael Keaton is Beetlejuice.
I'm the ghost with the most, babe.
Missed us?
All right. I probably should have said this at the top of the show, but I forgot, because the last couple of times we've said something at the top of the show, we got halfway through the show and realized we ain't started talking about that thing. But new and old business was short enough this week where we can stick with our original idea. So the subject, the theme of this one is director Tim Burton. We're going to talk about his body of work.
His contributions to the genre and just in pop culture and cinema all around.
You know, pretty much just about anybody who grew up in the 80s and 90s can list at least one, if not several, Tim Burton movies as perhaps their favorite movie of all time. And so, you know, we've talked about movies like Beetlejuice and whether you would consider that a full-on horror movie. You know, and maybe it's not, you know, because it's listed as a comedy, but, you know, it deals with dark themes.
Yeah.
And he's got that kind of creepy element into a lot of his work. And
that dark humor that just that can make you jump a little bit.
Absolutely. So, I mean, he fits right into our themes here. So we're going to talk a little bit about Mr. Burton. So, a couple little biological facts here. He was born August 25th, 1958.
I think you mean biographical, right?
Biographical.
Yeah.
He's a biological male. He ain't done the Caitlyn Jenner thing yet.
He has a size 11 shoe that he wears.
All right. But, yeah, he's born in 1958. He's heavily influenced by Dr. Seuss and Roald Dahl. After he graduated high school, he went to the California Institute of the Arts, which is shortened to Cal Arts. While he was at Cal Arts, he made a short film called Stalk of the Celery Monster. And Celery Monster got the attention of Disney's animation division, and then so he got picked up as a on an apprenticeship, mm-hmm. and he went on to work as an animator, a storyboard artist, and a concept artist on The Fox and the Hound, The Black Cauldron, and Tron. So just young kid out of college, you know, doing his thing, working for Disney.
Right.
In 1982, he made his first short film called Vincent, which is a black and white stop motion animation movie. That he actually had voiced by Vincent Price.
Okay.
That was followed by a live-action Hansel and Gretel fairy tale that was made exclusively for the Disney Channel. It ends in a kung fu fight between Hansel and Gretel, And it was shown once, completely shelved, and then disappeared to the point where people argued whether or not it even actually existed. But it was found and brought back out in like 2004 or something like that. Okay. You can find it at a museum somewhere.
Wow.
And he followed this effort up with Frankenweenie, the short movie that precedes some of his movies on DVD or whatever, the original short one. At that point, he was fired from Disney for making all of his movies too dark and scary for children to want to watch.
If they only knew.
So, he went from there.
Went rogue.
He went rogue, and he met Paul Reubens. And Paul Reubens was making a hit as a comedian, but in a stage show about Pee Wee Herman.
Yep.
And it was
for adults. It was an adult theme show.
Right.
It's very funny.
And he was Paul Reubens approached Tim Burton, and then Tim Burton was a big fan of Oingo Boingo, and approached Danny Elfman to do the music. And the first effort was 1985's Pee Wee's Big Adventure,
which was sweet.
Which, in my horror educated opinion, was a game changer.
Oh yeah.
We talked in the past about like the unnecessarily scary 80s and how you'd have just normal straightforward comedies that would have just these bizarre
scenes of
absolute horror for no reason. They didn't really further the plot. The movie's the same without them, but they're just like little
cut-ins. Just added a little bit to it.
And Burton was a master of that. So some of the scenes, man, like the clown.
The clown, the doctor clowns, yeah.
Well, the clown at the beginning when his bike was chained to it. The dinosaurs. Large Marge. And some of these are just classic. I mean, they fit just about any horror movie. I mean, Large Marge, that was stop motion.
Yeah.
So every little bit of that snake face thing popping out, every nanosecond, was worked on for like months by a team of special effects people for like 1 second of film just to scare the bejesus out of anybody who was watching it. So, he's got a kind of a sinister side in his storytelling.
Oh, just, no doubt.
Like reach around and poke you and be like, be scared.
Make sure you got your attention. It's an attention getter.
But, man, I remember the first time I saw Pee Wee's Big Adventure,
and I was just in love with it.
I don't know what the hell this is, but it's my new favorite movie.
Even my kids love it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and the music is so frantic, but it's like weird circus music, And the character of Pee Wee, which I realized was Paul Reubens, creation, but just the anachronism. Here you've got a grown man in a suit and a bow tie.
Mind of a child.
Well, he's also smarter than all the adults around.
Yeah.
He's independently wealthy somehow. He's like, everybody loves him though. He's got so many friends. I mean, he's just like this
eccentric around town, that
strange comic character.
Yeah.
That just goes on this weird adventure, and everything that he encounters is just more and more bizarre.
And everyone that he touches, they just connect to him.
Yeah. Tori's just got friends all over the Satan's helpers.
Yeah.
I say we let him go. No!
I say we hang him. Yeah. Then we cut him. Then we kill him.
So, you got your little bit of a dose of some horror with Pee Wee Herman. And then 3 years later, he turns around and drops Beetlejuice.
Which was another game changer, to be honest with you.
Beetlejuice, I have to say, is probably the movie, other than Jaws, which was a scary animal movie. But Beetlejuice changed my opinion on scary movies. And, I'm going to say, not the afterlife, not in a religious way, but in a just like what can be done with a ghost story sort of way. Went from being just kind of like creepy and spooky to otherworldly and bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a masterpiece in my opinion.
Oh yeah.
Beetlejuice is one of my favorite movies that have ever been made.
There's so much about Beetlejuice that just makes it almost a perfect movie. From the casting to the storyline, just everything about that movie is just, it's phenomenal, man. It was a perfect storm.
Absolutely.
Now, if Michael Keaton wouldn't have been cast in that part, you know, it would have been a different movie. But just the casting was on point.
Well, and I've been in love with Winona Ryder since
yes.
then. Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's many people my age that didn't have a semi-crush on her at some point. And then, you know, you see her in Stranger Things, and you're kind of like, yeah. She still got it. She's a little frantic, but hey.
Oh, she's always been on top of my list too, man.
But yeah, so many times on a Facebook group or whatever, people will be like, what was your first, you know, celebrity crush? I'm like, Lydia Deetz right there. Like,
and the movie holds. I watched it a couple nights ago. The movie holds up. You can watch it again and again and again. It doesn't get old.
It's timeless, and the special effects aren't wonky.
Right.
I mean, even the stop motion stuff with the snake and everything.
The sandworms.
Yeah. It's weird, but it works. And you can't imagine, like, if it would be different or better with CGI. I don't think it would.
No, because that gives it a certain element, a certain charm.
Yes. And, you know,
you don't want it to be too realistic. You want it to be like it is. Because
mm-hmm.
it gives it that charm, like I said.
So, I mean, right off the bat, you know, you got two of two. And then 1989's Batman brought me back into comic books.
Right.
You know, I was kind of outgrowing them. Kind of left them behind a little bit. Starting to look in other directions.
And getting into music and stuff.
And then Batman came out and it was like, oh yeah, you know, and I just remember the previews, because we had cable. The previews would play over and over and over again, and you'd have that da 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 dun dun dun, and just like the little quotes from the Joker.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, this town needs an enema. You know, and then the soundtrack by Prince.
The Prince did a great job on that one.
But even It Takes a Strange Mind. I mean, Not to take away from Prince, but you're thinking of like the Caped Crusader, and like Danny Elfman's score is so like old school radio, like radio drama. It's serious and it's epic, and you're like, who are we gonna get to do the sideline songs? Like, what's going on in the background?
Right.
And it takes a guy like Tim Burton to be like, you know who would be perfect?
Just get Prince in here.
We'll get Prince. And he'll just wipe the floor with this stuff. And he did. I mean, the Prince side of that soundtrack is incredible. Oh, yeah.
Every song is catchy.
Yeah.
And every song fits in the scene that it's used in.
And the whole, like, Prince being purple and the Joker's purple and everything's kind of...
It fell into place.
But you mentioned something about Batman and the merchandising. What was that?
Yeah, well, I was talking to this guy today, and he was saying how, you know, you had your toy trend with movies after Star Wars, and things just kind of took off. And the thing about it is, a similar thing happened with Star Wars, and you'll see what I'm talking about. You know, you had the first Batman movie that came out. Tim Burton, kind of dark, wasn't a kid's movie. You know, it was a kid's movie. It could be seen by kids, but it wasn't a fun, campy... It was The Dark Knight.
Yes.
It wasn't your Adam West Batman.
And Batman killed a lot of people, too.
Yeah. So the toys kind of flopped. Okay, so then they had the second one. Tim Burton, once again, another dark one. You know, another one kind of twisted. The toys kind of flopped then. And what he was saying is, you get to Batman Returns, and you get Mr. Freeze. It suddenly gets campy as hell, and part of the reason was... they wanted to sell toys with this damn movie.
See, I thought the merchandising from Batman was almost insidious. I mean, it was everywhere.
But this is one thing. They promoted it a lot, but parents just didn't want to get it for their kids. Because they didn't look at the movie as being something that kids should be into.
Okay.
And I was talking to this guy. We were talking about the toys that made us. And he said, well, you know, I saw one also, you know, concerning the Batman series and how those toys did. But if you notice with Star Wars, you know, and just from watching the show, the first movie, Lucas and them didn't think that the toys were going to make a ton of money.
Yeah.
But by the third movie, they saw the potential, and all of a sudden you get Ewoks and you get a lighter side of Star Wars in an attempt to try to appease to that same market.
True. But yeah, merchandising is there's so much in that. It's like reading the script before you even start making the movie. You're like, okay, let me sell a toy here. Because I mean, that Joker gas was mean.
Oh yeah,
like and the Penguin. I mean, we're not even to Batman Returns yet, but I mean, it's coming up.
He was scary.
The Penguin was scary.
He was scarier than Joker for sure.
And Catwoman was pure sex.
Yep.
I mean, there was. She is and will always be my favorite Catwoman, but there was nothing campy about her. She was just she's just oozing sexuality through the whole thing
and evil.
Yeah,
she was sexy and evil. You know?
Yeah. Well, then he followed up 1989's Batman with 1990's Edward Scissorhands.
Another great movie.
Great movie.
I worked in the movies for that one too. I was
working. That's so bizarre. Again, not. You know. It's just a weird concept, you know.
It had to come from a mind that just had that type of imagination that could handle that.
And you've got this dark, you know, Edward himself was a nice guy, but he looked scary, and he lived in a big gothic mansion, and then he gets displaced into suburbia, and that's even weirder, you know. So it just kind of like I remember that, but that was another one. Like I remember coming out of there with just heart bubbles all like blah, 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 for Winona Ryder. I didn't really prefer the blonde side, but hey, you know, she sold it. And funny story, because that's when Johnny Depp and Winona Ryder started dating. Mm-hmm. It was during Edward Scissorhands, and he had a tattoo that said Winona forever. And then whenever they broke up and he needed to get his tattoo fixed, he went and had part of it taken off or removed so it said Wino forever. Like, what a way to remember your girlfriend, right? That's the kind of celebrity gossip I can get behind. His insulting tattoo removal.
It's passive aggressive. Get back.
But, you know, Edward Scissorhands was just the makeup in that movie.
The makeup, the storyline, the score. And that one, the score did a lot for that movie.
And I believe, too, that that's one of those soundtracks. I have that soundtrack, and I'll throw it in my car and just drive around and listen to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just atmospheric. It's kind of like sad Christmas music, almost. Mm-hmm. And it's not really sad, but it's just kind of melancholy.
Right.
You know, but, you know, you throw it in your car whenever it's kind of a gray day, it just kind of fits. You know, you're driving around listening to tunes. And except for it's got the Tom Jones song at the end, which drives me nuts. But and that's also when Anthony Michael Hall stopped being a nerd and started being a bully.
Oh, yeah. You know, like, he grew up.
Like, dude, leave Edward alone, man. All right, then you got that one followed up in 1992 by Batman Returns, which in a lot of ways I think is superior to the original. Okay. The Penguin was scarier than the Joker. The Catwoman, that we've already talked about her. You know, I think that's one of Michelle Pfeiffer's just like best performances.
Oh yeah,
and she's been in a lot of dramatic roles, but. She just embodied that character.
Yeah, that was pure acting. I mean, she total changed personality in that one.
And I remember they were showing behind the scenes of that whip scene where she's in the store. Mm-hmm. And she's got all the mannequins and she's popping the heads off of them. That she'd been trained to use that whip. And that was it was the first take. Like, they had mannequins set up for her to do it over and over and over again. But she nailed it in the first shot. She's like, pow, pow, pow. She's like, I was nervous that last one wasn't going to go. We'd have to start over because it was just like too perfect. It's like bowling a 300, you know.
And the Danny DeVito Penguin, it was creepy as hell. And part of it just was, he was so dirty. He wore the dingy long johns. It added so much to that character. Dude. That was a very well-developed version of the Penguin. It wasn't the funny Penguin from Adam West.
No.
It was a frightening Penguin.
And he was sadistic, too. I mean, he had no problem killing people.
Bit that dude's nose off.
That one dude's like, are we going to steal a bunch of kids in the middle of the night? And he's like, isn't that a little? He's like, bam! Shoots him and like, dunks in the water. He's like, no, it's a lot. Then, of course, you have Christopher Walken in there.
Right.
You know.
Scene stealer himself.
Oh, yeah. When he like does the little head bob thing right before he pushes her out the window, he's like, push.
Foo Fighters.
All right. Then he took a turn a little bit for the serious going, I mean, not real serious, but serious nonetheless with Ed Wood.
Okay.
I mean, it was a biopic. It was funny, but it wasn't, you know, his, I don't know, I take that back. It's still, that's a bizarre movie.
Yeah, it is. That's a good way to put it.
I saw it pretty, I didn't watch it in the theater. I saw it pretty close to when I, right after it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Martin Landau won that award for playing Bela Lugosi.
Yeah.
And it's like, and but the Ed Wood story itself is so weird. And then
yeah,
you add a Tim Burton, and like, I almost, now that I think about it, like, I almost didn't remember the Ed Wood movie as much as being interested in Ed Wood movies and going to see them. Because sometimes you'll see, like, a, I don't know, you'll see, like, a movie that you didn't really care about, or something that was critically panned. And then you find out, like, what the creator was trying to do, and you can see it through different eyes, and it makes it good.
Right.
Not necessarily good, but it makes it better.
Better.
But Ed Wood movies are not good.
No.
Like, they're just, it's like, wow. That's why he earned that reputation for being a bad director. You know, he may have been motivated, and I'll give him that, but he just couldn't make a movie. But then we follow that up with, and all of these are classics, but then there's another classic right after that. I mean, these are your hit songs. I mean, these are, he doesn't have movies.
A bunch
in
of
between.
Number ones. Yeah.
You know, then he drops Mars Attacks.
Classic, classic film.
And Mars Attacks, again, completely unexpected.
I know.
Because he's using these, I mean, completely bizarre and surreal aliens. You know, it wasn't like World of Worlds where they're like trying to make it realistic.
Yeah, he was looking to make it just outlandish.
But
Map.
But then you realize how much true, like, I mean, it's like true horror, but like
she lets dark. It was totally dark.
She lets the bird go, and they're like, psst, psst, yeah. And they start just zapping everybody. And Jack Black gets murdered on TV in front of his parents.
He turns around, takes all
right. They sew Sarah Jessica Parker's head onto the dog.
That was funny. The special effects were great,
you know, movie. And just so much, and like, how do we defeat these things? I mean, they're pretty easy to kill if you could actually get a shot off, but they had superior firepower.
Right. You couldn't get close to them.
But you kill them with yodeling.
Yeah, it's yodeling music.
That makes their heads explode.
But it was a great movie. It was very unexpected. It's not, when I went into watching the movie, I saw it at home, I think. I don't think I saw it at the theater. But it wasn't what I expected it to be.
Mm-mm.
At all.
Not at all. And that was what was so crazy about it. Was
Pierce Brosnan, the cast. It had a pretty big cast in there.
Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Was it Glenn Close? Jack Nicholson played like four parts.
Four parts, yeah.
And in like that one where he's like the casino guy, like it's barely recognizable that it's him. He's playing way off character.
Well, it reminds me of Tom Cruise in Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
Same type of character.
Because he's like, he's got his voice different, and he's got the glasses
and the wig.
And you're like, he started, you know, it took me a few minutes to realize
that's Jack Nicholson.
That's him too. Wow. You know, they kill Congress, and he's like, well, you still got two of the four branches of government working for you. And that ain't bad. You know, like, just some of the lines in that film.
They're the classic.
And yeah, Mars Attacks is great. I've got this
very underrated film for sure.
I got this picture. It's like a fan art somebody did on DeviantArt, and I saved it because. But it's just, and it's a cool painting, but it's this like, from the back, it's this woman wearing a bikini, and so like you see her like from like maybe the neck down, and you see her down her back, mm-hmm. And then there's a big hole in her torso, and then it goes down, and you see her like back, you know, her rear end and stuff. And then you got a Mars Attacks alien like looking through the hole at you.
<That's cool. laughs>
It's badass.
That is very cool.
I wanted to buy it and frame it, you know, get the artist to sign it, but I was like, I can't put that up when my kids are running around. All right, so what do you do after Mars Attacks? You remake one of the most famous stories in American literature, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. Which, again, I remember, you know, The Headless Horseman, I think, was in Scooby-Doo. It was in Disney.
As a kid, that was scary, though. The idea of The Headless Horseman.
Oh, of course, yeah. I remember being scared of it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And then whenever he darkened it up and, you know, that...
Made it really frightening.
He was chopping off heads with that axe.
Yeah.
A lot, you know? And to have it be like that satanic witch that was controlling him. And, I mean, there was a lot of darkness in that movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And at the end, he threw his head at him and he turns into Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
I want to go see the Foo Fighters. Thanks for my head. But yeah, I saw Sleepy Hollow in the theater, and that was right about the time McFarlane Toys was coming out with all those really cool figures.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know what happened to it. I think it got broken or damaged in a move, but I used to have that Headless Horseman. Didn't keep it in the box just because it was so cool without it, but he had that long flowing cape.
Yeah.
And that horse that was reared up on its back.
Yeah.
And, it came with a Christopher Walken head you can put on there if you want to.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. I've seen it at Trader's Village a few times.
Yeah, I mean, they're not very expensive, right. But, you know, they're
cool.
They are very cool. I don't remember if I ever saw the remake of Planet of the Apes. Did you see that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw.
That was kind of in my phase when I was, like, really anti-remake. And I was like...
I was a big Planet of the Apes fan as a kid.
Mark Wahlberg is no Charlton Heston.
It wasn't nearly what the original movies were. I mean, it was more of special effects.
Yeah.
You know, throw it in your face. Look how awesome it is. But it didn't have the same...
Heart
as the original ones.
Well, then if you're looking for heart, then it came back around with Big Fish. I mean, there was some article... it was an article. It was talking about how... You know, Tim Burton has kind of lucked into a success. And it's like, I don't know. These are like a lot of American classics. They're going to age.
Yeah.
You got to freshen it up.
They'll
be watching these things 40, 50 years from now, 100 years from now. A lot of these are, you know, we're talking about mostly through the 90s here. You know, so some of these are 25, 30, 35 years old and still just as fresh as when they first came out. They're kind of timeless. I mean, there's a couple little dated things here and there with technology, but not a whole lot.
But the thing about it is the lack of technology or the dated technology adds to the charm of the movies.
Right. Well, I guess I'm talking more along the lines of you're not in these movies, you're not really looking at a bunch of trends. You don't have a bunch of snarky talking kids talking about like in Terminator 2, where he's like trying to capture the lingo of the 90s. And it's like, and so it sounds real dated whenever John Connor's talking.
Right.
You got kids with mullets and blah, blah, blah. I mean, about the most dated thing I can think of in a lot of these movies is maybe the BMX kids in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah.
You know, with the pads and the...
Yeah, they're all decked out.
The Dayglow bikes. But even that, I mean, that's just a snapshot. But they're not like... They're not playing with like... video games and stuff like that to make it weird and dated. So Big Fish is a movie that, you know, will make you cry. I mean, there's no doubt about it. That's a tough one, especially at the end whenever he gets his dad and carries him to the water and, you know, turns him into the fish. That's a great, great film. Let's see. 2005, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I was very anti-remake at that time also. I only recently watched it, maybe 2 years ago.
I completely did not like that one.
I didn't finish it.
I saw it in the theater.
This is a movie that shouldn't have been remade.
I was totally disappointed. I remember at the time, because of the success of like Sleepy Hollow and... You know, Edward Scissorhands and the Johnny Depp, Tim Burton, like, ooh, Tim Burton and Johnny Depp, like, what are they going to do with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory? That could be really cool. But the Johnny Depp with his weird
Just fake, trying to be as weird as possible.
This weird fake grin and making all kinds of strange noises and stuff. And as weird as Johnny Depp is in that movie, he's nowhere near as creepy as Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder was a normal guy, just really eccentric and did just odd things.
Right.
He wasn't a weird person. He just did weird things.
Correct. Well, and he had more menace. It was like he said more by not saying things. Right. He's just sitting there like, no, stop, wait.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, you know, and he just straightforward, like, don't touch that. Oh, you touched it. Sorry. You know, like, whereas like in the other one, it was more like he was setting traps and it was just not as friendly, I guess.
Yeah, that's one that should have been remade. Yeah.
And what'd you think of Sweeney Todd?
I never saw the whole thing.
I don't like musicals.
That's one I've never seen the whole thing.
So. Yeah. I mean, he should be awesome. I mean, he's a barber that's cutting people's throats and dumping them in the river. But I was just never drawn into that one.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of like, eh, all right, that's cool, I guess. It's another Johnny Depp joint. You know, like, there are other actors out there, you know. Alice in Wonderland was good, though.
Yeah, that one wasn't bad. That was a good remake.
And
it told the story well from the eyes of Tim Burton. And it stuck more with the story structure and the way it should have been. So
I enjoyed it. I thought it was, you know, I do like the idea of not necessarily retellings, but like what happened next, which is what happened because she comes back as not a full adult, but as more of a grown-up than when she was there before.
Right.
And so her job was not finished, you know, that sort of stuff. So I thought that was kind
of
neat.
Now, the following Halloween, it drove me nuts. The number of people dressed up as the Mad Hatter and shit like that.
But. Yeah. Well, that's anything. I mean, look at how much...
We always get that one movie. The number of crows that they had back in the day. I'm sure you remember that.
The crows and the Jokers. You know, like... How many... Like, I was in a costume party band. And they're like, oh, let's do Batman. And then one guy, Kyle, he shows up. I mean, he had a badass Joker costume. But it was just like, we were all sitting there just kind of bullshitting the band practice. He was there. We're like, well, who do you think Kyle's going to be? Which was fun because I got to be Batman. So
it's cool.
You know, it was easy for me. You know, just black shirt and black pants. Had a black Batman shirt with long sleeves and a cape and a mask. You know, it was like, I'm cool. But...
Did I play Nigerian Batman for you yet? My God, we gotta talk about that later. I gotta remember. I can't believe I didn't talk to you about Nigerian Batman.
No,
it is fucking incredible.
All right, I'm ready for it. I can proudly say that I did not see Dark Shadows.
I haven't seen that one.
Here, I guess, right around Sweeney Todd. That's whenever that Johnny Depp making sounds just got way too over the top.
He turned into the Marilyn Manson of the acting world.
Kind of.
That's what I was sort of thinking.
Well, he just kind of gets... In his earlier roles, he had a like doe-eyed kind of concentration, and he could play an eccentric character, but he was still heartfelt. It's like almost as he's gotten older, he lost... I'm not going to say he lost the heart, but he lost the ability to convey that without making some kind of weird sound.
Right.
And you're like... That was a strange head shake for those of you who are listening. But there's a YouTube video you can find. It's like 20 minutes of Johnny Depp making sounds. And it's just like, yeah, oh. It's just like, yeah, that's about the last several Tim Burton movies. But, I mean, shit, dude. All the way down to Big Fish, and then I enjoyed Alice in Wonderland. Frankenweenie won the Academy Award.
Yep.
He did a full-length Frankenweenie, and that was great.
Yeah.
And then he just recently did Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar...
That's a fun movie.
That was. I read the book, too, so it stayed pretty true to the story.
It's
so,
a fun movie.
It's kind of like a really bizarro world X-Men.
Yeah.
Is what that is. It's like... The X-Men, they can use their hands, you know, their powers. They can shoot, like, ice out of their hands. With this, they're like invisible or they're full of bees. It's like strange powers.
Right.
But, you know, it was a compelling story. It was good stuff. So, but that's where we end with the body of work of Tim Burton. I mean, but from 19...
Very impressive body of work. Yeah,
very impressive. And, you know, hey, you're going to miss a couple of times. And it seems almost in the last couple of years, he's missed like... I think he missed the mark like 4 times out of like 20 movies.
That's pretty damn good.
And he didn't miss the mark. They still made got awards and they were still hits. Yeah. They're just not stuff that I really personally enjoyed.
Right.
But, you know, and then you kind of look at the legacy. You know, because we didn't even mention Nightmare Before Christmas because he... He produced that,
right?
You know, he didn't write it, but that's
well, he was involved with it. But he had
that's got his mark, has all his flavor over on it,
yeah.
You know, and that it. I mean, it's kind of had a renaissance maybe in the like the last 5 years, but that is that captures both markets of the Halloween
and Christmas,
and it's phenomenal. I mean,
it's a great movie. It's a great, holds up very very well.
Yeah, I think it's almost gotten better with age. You know. Because right when it first started coming out, you're kind of like, well, you could have done this with that new CGI stuff. But the fact that they didn't left it with a lot of heart.
Yeah.
And
he was also involved with Coraline, wasn't he?
Yep.
Yep.
Well, no. His production team that did Nightmare Before Christmas did Coraline.
Okay. All right.
So
he had some influence on
it. Yeah. Funny. My daughter looks like Coraline. You know, especially she cut her hair and so it's shorter, and she looks like Coraline, like the movie Coraline. Well, she went and spent the night with a friend's house, and for those of you who don't know, my daughter's kind of sneaky. She'll do things she ain't supposed to do, like eat candy, and you know, even though it's not as if you know candy's such a bad thing, but she'll sneak candy and then she'll go all batshit crazy. And then get in trouble.
You don't know why.
You're like, oh, you snuck candy. Okay, I get it. Well, she spent the night at a friend's house, and they watched Coraline, and she got terrified. Because Coraline's a scary movie.
My daughter loves Coraline.
Well, Juliet came home and was not a fan of Coraline.
But she gets older, so she'll start
appreciating. Well, I mentioned it to her the other day because she, you know, there's an action figure. I had to go to Toys R Us and buy a present for a friend's kid, and there's an action figure of Coraline.
I'm gonna have to look for that for my daughter.
And it's at Toys R Us, and it's Coraline. She's wearing the raincoat, you know, the yellow raincoat. Well, my daughter's doing something, and she doesn't have a yellow raincoat on, but she's got like this pink jacket that kind of hangs down the same way. She's got her hair a certain way and she's doing her thing. And I was like, hey, like when we go to Comic Palooza or whatever, your character should be Coraline. And that little kid's face dropped and she started backing into a corner. And I was like, what? She's like, Coraline scares me. I don't want to be Coraline. I don't want anything to do with that. Like, she didn't say it in those words, but I was just like, okay. you don't have to, but man, you'd sure pull it off if you did.
You know, I found a copy of the Neil Gaiman book for my daughter.
Nice.
At Goodwill.
It's a good book.
Yeah. She was like, I didn't even know they had a book. I was like, yeah, it's by a guy named Neil Gaiman, who's a master.
Yeah. If she likes that, there's several others.
Yeah.
I just finished rereading the Graveyard book.
Okay.
Which is phenomenal. If she likes Coraline, she'd love Graveyard.
Okay.
It's children's, you know, it is technically a children's book, I guess is the way, but it's grown up enough.
It holds up, yeah.
So, yeah. But I think that's going to do it for Mr. Tim Burton. I don't know, what's your favorite Tim Burton movie? What's your favorite scene from a Tim Burton movie? Did Tim Burton inspire you to do anything? To write, to play music, whatever?
Do you not like Tim Burton?
Yeah.
Might not be everybody's cup of tea.
Strangely enough, there's a lot of people out there that don't, and that's just fine. We're not here to force your opinions on things. But, yeah, so you got any closing thoughts?
If you're not familiar with the workings of Tim Burton, make sure you get familiar with it. The chances that you're not are slim to none, because he's been involved with some tremendous contributions to cinema.
Absolutely. And with that, we're going to say see you later.
Later.